Scott, take me back a little bit, if you can. Where did the idea blossom for writing a book about Calgary's soccer scene?
So I grew up playing competitive soccer in Calgary, actually with and against a lot of players who were on Cavalry's inaugural roster in 2019. And I grew up playing against Tommy Wheeldon Jr.'s Foothills teams, you know, teams that had Dominic Zator on them, for instance. So I had a pretty good frame of reference when the team arrived as to who was going to be on it and the journey that had kind of developed to get to that point. Because after I stopped playing, I kind of kept following the careers of some of my former teammates and opponents. So I knew all about the Foothills men's U23 team that had had a lot of success in the Premier Development League, or the PDL. So that was coached by Tommy Wheeldon Jr. And they had a really interesting story in their four-year journey to winning that title in 2018. So when the pro team started, I was pretty keen to cover them. I hooked up with a Vancouver-based blog and website and podcast called Away From the Numbers, or AFTN. So I kind of became their Calgary correspondent, and I went to pretty much every home game for Cavalry in 2019, which, Sandra, I know you were there at the time covering the team. It was a really exciting season. Cavalry set the pace for the new CPL, Canadian Premier League, and they had a lot of early success. So when they beat Vancouver Whitecaps in the Canadian Championship, that was a huge, like, David versus Goliath moment. And I kind of knew at that point that I wanted to write a book about, you know, this new team and how it was that they were able to so quickly establish themselves. Because I knew it didn't, obviously, the story didn't start in 2018. So I started, I think, right after that inaugural 2019 season. I'd never written a book before, so I didn't really know what I was doing. But I got to work on it, and then when the pandemic hit, I did kind of shelf it for a while because I was very busy at work at the time, and my motivation wasn't really there anymore. But a few years later, after bringing it up a few times, my wife kind of reminded me, you know, you were really keen on writing this book, so why don't you just start it today? And I'm glad I listened to her, because that was back in early 2022. And it took me about 14 months to finish writing it. And then after I was done in the spring of 2023, I kind of sat on it for a while because we were in the middle of the CPL season. And I wanted to see how Cavalry did last year. And of course, they went on to win the regular season championship, which I was glad I waited, because, you know, I got to include that information in the book towards the end. So that was kind of the impetus for the project. But I included other teams because, you know, if you know the Wheeldon family, like, they arrived in Calgary in the early 2000s due to the Calgary Storm, which was a predecessor. So I knew I needed to at least go back to the early 2000s in terms of my research. And then in doing that research, I learned more about the teams from the 1980s. So then I even delved into the history of pro soccer dating back to the 1981 NASL season, and it just turned into a much more comprehensive project.
I think back to that inaugural season for Cavalry FC, and what a perfect storm. You make the final in your inaugural year, and for a market that was starving for soccer for such a long time, I think it was just such a perfect introduction to the sport once again. And that's what we know now, but I do think it's important to look back on the history of soccer in this city, because I can even remember when I was very, very young going to Mawata Armory's stadium that unfortunately is no longer there, but there was a history then. So why is it important that Calgarians know the city's soccer story?
Yeah, we started with the Calgary Boomers, who played in the old North American Soccer League in 1981. And that was a very interesting league because it was kind of the precursor to Major League Soccer. A lot of big name players from world soccer in the 1970s and 80s kind of came to the U.S. to finish off their careers. Like Pelé was probably the biggest example, but Johan Cruyff, George Best, a lot of, you know, big European and South American players came to North America. But the league itself was very, it had an adversarial relationship with FIFA because it was constantly changing rules and doing its own thing. It kind of was an Americanized version of the sport. It added a lot of flash to generate more fan interest. So Calgary joined the NASL at a very bad time because the league was, it throughout its tenure, but especially towards the end, it had an overspending problem. So Calgary jumped on the bandwagon a few years before the league went bust, and it only lasted 1 year. Nelson Scalbania bought the team from Memphis, overspent on players, gave away too many free tickets to come watch games at McMahon Stadium. So it wasn't a great start to pro soccer in Calgary. And after that, there were a few more examples, experiments like the Calgary Mustangs of 1983, who played in the Canadian Professional Soccer League. Very short-lived league. It only lasted one summer before pretty much every team had to fold due to various problems. But then Calgary had the Calgary Kickers and the Strikers, who you alluded to, playing at Muwata Stadium in the old Canadian Soccer League. Actually, it was definitely like a precursor to the Canadian Premier League now, where you had, you know, this new league emerge for Canadians by Canadians. And it did last for a decent amount of time, 6-7 years, but eventually many teams had to fold. Other teams wanted to go play in an American league, like Vancouver's defecting to the American League was pretty much the final nail in the coffin. But yeah, there were all these experiments and teams that came before Cavalry that tried to make it work, but due to a variety of factors and conditions, they just weren't able to last. So that's really what I discovered in my research is, you know, why did they fail and what differences did Cavalry implement to make sure they didn't suffer the same misfortunes?
Scott, something that's really stuck out to me over the years is the lack of infrastructure, and it's glaring. I work on 7th Avenue. I go by Millennium Park literally every day, and I always think to myself, goodness, wouldn't that be a perfect place for a small soccer stadium? And it's a shame that the Muwata Stadium isn't there. Not to take away from what the facility provides right now, but let's talk a little bit about infrastructure issues in Calgary when it comes to soccer.
Yeah, that's a great question. And Muwata was almost as central as you can get. So that's where the Calgary Kickers and Strikers played in the late 1980s. And it really was an ideal venue for their purposes. Yeah, it got bulldozed and replaced in the late 90s. And if you look at the Calgary Storm, which was the team that formed shortly thereafter, the venue that they played at was really the problem from the beginning. They rented Foothills from the city, but their team chairman, Mike Van Dale, told the media that it was the worst venue in the A-League, which was the pro league that the Storm played in. And they didn't have a lot of revenue generating possibilities. They weren't able to like make money from parking. They had to set up and take down their merchandise and their concession stands every single home game. They only had one kind of grandstand, which was pretty far from the action. So there wasn't a great like game day environment or atmosphere really. And they didn't even have, I think, permanent washroom facilities at the time. So All kinds of factors that just made it seem like a bit more of an amateur operation than it probably wanted to appear as. So the venue for the Storm was really a big part of their downfall, as well as just poor performances and results, especially once they graduated from the semi-pro PDL to the fully professional USL A-League, which it's hard to remember, but at the time, the A-League had some pretty big American teams like the Seattle Sounders, Portland Timbers, so some really tough opposition. And Calgary Storm was essentially an Alberta all-star team. Like most of the players were from Calgary and Edmonton. they didn't really recruit a lot. They didn't have a lot of money to sign players from elsewhere. So they really just, you know, I think in 2002, they went on a double-digit losing streak, which really dwindled fan support to the point where they, you know, they weren't making nearly enough money to sustain themselves, and they had to fold.
Certainly, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the women's game. Still, I'd say relatively young in our city, but there has been success at the United Women's Soccer level, which is a pro-am model coming through Calgary Foothills. And now we know that Diana Matheson's league officially will be starting in Calgary next year. What, in your research, did you learn about Calgary's women's soccer scene?
Yeah, I did discover the Calgary Wildfire, who played in 2004 in the, it was called the W League. It was part of the United Soccer League. So they played in the W League under Glenn Ramsey, who had been involved with the Storm, but he was the GM of the Wildfire. They played at Rugby Park in the southwest, or the south, yeah, southeast of the city. And they didn't have a great season. They went 2-12 and only managed to play for the 1 year. But there was a 16-year-old Desiree Scott on that team. So very interesting to see how her her first pro exposure was actually in Calgary before she went on to, you know, win the gold medal for Canada and forge a career of her own. But it was a long time after that before before high-level opportunities arrived in Calgary on the women's side. I did also mention in my book, wrote a couple of pages about Calgary Foothills WFC, which is the pro-am team that currently plays at Broadview Park. But that is, you know, that is very similar to what we saw on the men's side with the Foothills PDL team. The Foothills UWS team is really creating opportunities for local women to go on and play professional soccer. We've seen this past year Maya Jones get signed or get drafted by the San Diego Wave, and she actually just scored her first professional goal, which is phenomenal. Grace Storti was signed by Braga in Portugal. So we've seen those opportunities, but the fact that we're, as of next year, going to have a professional team in Calgary means that maybe we don't have to export our top talented women's players for much longer.
Now that the book is done, Scott, what do you think is the biggest surprise that you learned about Calgary's soccer history?
I think the amount of time it was going to take, not just to research and write it, but the post, like the pre-production post-writing phase as well. I think I calculated I probably spent more than 500 hours writing the book. But then I probably spent a few hundred hours after that doing all of the necessary things afterward that you don't really think about that goes into producing a book. So even just like, I consulted with a lawyer to make sure that, you know, I wasn't putting myself at any risk if I published any photos, because I was publishing a lot of my own photos, but they have, you know, the Cavalry logo on in the photo somewhere, or like WestJet, because that's the team's jersey sponsor. So just making sure that I was kind of protecting myself in from any kind of legal action. I didn't really anticipate anything, but I just wanted to cover my bases. But a lot of stuff that, because I've always worked for media outlets, I haven't had to worry about liability personally.
Yeah.
You know, obviously every media outlet is liable for what they produce and cover, but in terms of this project, I was putting my own, you know, reputation and everything out on a limb. So I just wanted to make sure that I was being as diligent as possible and making sure that I was kind of self-protected, so to speak.
You're a journalist, so you know what it's like to see your name in print, but a book is a little bit different. So you're holding the book, you see it, it is a physical object, and it's done. Your name's on it. Many hours going into that book. What does it mean to you?
Honestly, a bit of an emotional moment, because the book was available for order on May 29th, and it was exciting to let people know that. But I put my own bulk order through on May 30th, and it took 2.5 weeks before it arrived. So every day I was checking the shipping tracker on Purelator just to see what stage it was at. And actually, my wife had ordered a copy of her own, and hers arrived the day before mine did. So her copy was the first one I got to hold, which was good. And it just felt so great to, like, yeah, hold it in my hands. It was heavier than I thought it would be, which was funny. But yeah, now I've got my boxes and boxes in the basement of copies. So, but I still am not, like, tired of looking at it. I like to just pick it up and flip through and reminisce.